Hey y'all, before we begin, a quick message. The Retro Zoo has ceased production, but that's not necessarily bad news because Steven and I are working on a new project, The Retro Station. And what I want to let you listen to is the first episode of that new podcast. You're going to find it very familiar, and that's very intentional. That podcast is now available on Apple and all your podcast catchers. Please do me a favor right now, and whatever app you are using to listen to this, please go into it and find Retro Station and subscribe to it now, because the future episodes of that show will be exclusively on that feed and not on this feed any longer. We do appreciate your support of the Retro Zoo and do hope that you will continue your support by heading over to the Retro Station with us. Thanks, and we'll see you there.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to engage in the ultimate retro nerd experience. The Techno Funk Boy presents The Retro Station.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the inaugural episode of Retro Station. I am one of your hosts, Kai.
And I'm Steven.
And welcome. This is episode number one.
How have you been doing, man?
Oh, doing all right. I'm really excited about doing this, and we got some good hopefully interesting shows planned. Confidently interesting.
Yes, there you go.
I don't know what I'm saying.
Drive forward with confidence.
Right. So pretty pumped to kind of get started. For those of us who are joining us for the first time, welcome. You've come to the right place, being episode one, and this is going to be your source for what we like to call a retro nerd, and that is kind of all the really, really, really dorky stuff that brings us nostalgia.
Yeah,
not just any nostalgia. It's got to be nerdy nostalgia.
Yeah.
And so that will include, you know, science fiction, retro gaming, Dungeons and Dragons,
Call of Cthulhu,
Lovecraft. All of that fun jazz. Yeah. And so we're kind of pumped to be here. And so how have you been doing?
Man, I've been doing really well. I've been spending the last couple of weeks looking forward to this moment in time that never seemed like it would be here. You know, I mean, I'd wake up every morning and run into the kitchen and take my permanent marker that was magnetized to the side of the fridge and cross off another day on our calendar fridge. And,
we've been planning it for like 4 days.
I thought this was in the works for a long time. I've been planning this for...
Oh, okay. You just didn't tell me.
Today we'll have another podcast. No, I'm just kidding. No, I've been excited about it, and I'm excited to talk about all these retro nerdy stuff.
Nice, good. Well, we are going to be talking in just a little bit about a book that we chose very intentionally, because this is going to kind of embody what we're going for here, and there's another aspect of things that kind of embodies what we're going for here, and that is as this is being broadcast. I'm taking part in the Final Fantasy V 4-Job Fiesta event, I guess.
I don't speak Spanish. Is that 4-Job Party or?
Yes, the 4-Job Party.
Okay.
And we're going to hopefully be wrapping this up hopefully within the next about month and a half, because this does end at the end of August. And if people who have played Final Fantasy V, it relies heavily on the job system, and your players can take on your characters can take on any different types of jobs to teach them different skills. And this particular one puts a little randomizing element in there that you are only allowed to use 4 jobs, one from each stage of the game. And you have to the bots that run the game, I guess, assign you your jobs as you go, and you finish out the game with just those jobs. So I'm taking part in that, and I bring up, first of all, because once we do wrap this up, we're going to discuss a little bit more detail than simply this. But most importantly, it's these are types of things that are around and are available to, not just experience those things that we had great nostalgia for, but also experience them in new ways. And our topic for a little bit later in the episode is kind of like that too, because we're going to be discussing Dune, which we actually just read, both of us, I think, you've read it for the first time, right?
Yeah, that was my first time reading it.
Yeah, and I had at least read it in kind of anticipation of a new film version coming out, and so we're going to do our first impressions here, and then get more into it as we get closer to that date. But and first of all, I kind of wanted to discuss with you if there was like a moment in time where you realized that you very much enjoyed a thing, and this thing kind of put you squarely in the nerd camp, and kind of how that looked in your life.
Yeah, I actually have a pretty distinct memory of that. Yeah, of that moment in time. And it was actually after I had been a nerd, because I didn't know I was a nerd. I was just born that way. And I guess as I grew older, I just accepted that video games were sweet, and not just games, but science fiction and a lot of the things that kind of get clumped in that what some think is a refuse pile of nerddom, and the others of us find it to be a treasure heap with the dragon away. I love nerdy stuff, but I didn't know about nerds, basically. I was very sheltered, so sheltered as a youth, that actually wasn't around a lot of other kids. It's a long story, maybe we can get to later, but basically it wasn't until I was actually in a Boy Scouts, and kids were playing Magic the Gathering.
And, oh, interesting, okay.
And I was like, whoa, this is an awesome game. And my older brother was playing it, and a good friend of mine were playing it. And I remember going on campouts, and a lot of the kids were out there tying knots and chopping logs and learning land nav and doing first aid, and we were like either in the tents at night playing Magic or on the picnic tables in the campgrounds playing Magic, and got fussed at once or twice by scoutmasters, and other kids would walk by, nerds, and I guess for me I was like, whoa, this is for nerds. Like I was a little embarrassed, I remember, but then I realized that to be embarrassed by what my true nature would be somehow dishonorable. And so I also liked the people I played with too. Like, they were the kind of people that I don't know. Yeah. You have this common bond. You're like, oh, we're all getting called nerds, so that's fine because we're still gonna keep playing. And so yeah, it was Magic the Gathering. It was and that took up a big portion of my from 11 years old to, well, I don't know. I played for a long time. I still play. I play Magic the Gathering Arena now. Online, right. I sold my cards a long time ago, and now it's one of those things you get rid of your collection, because there was a point in time where I was like, I probably won't play with anybody for ever again, and I sold my cards, and then 6 months later you meet somebody that has a deck, like, hey, you want to play? You're like, wait, I sold all my cards. So yeah, I had a great black deck. It was demons, and
you're like, yes, I do, but I can't.
And then I would always tell people what the deck I had, and I said, like, I just started doing, like, it's like an instinct. It's like, oh yeah, but I had a black and totally black vampire demon deck with Baron Singer and four Singer vampires and Bad Moons, and it was sweet. I had a hecatome anyway, but so I just
it wasn't just a tome, it was a hecatome.
Dude, it was a good looking, the art on it was awesome. I had a Hellraiser, I had a bunch of really cool but anyway, so that was the moment for me. What about you?
You know, that actually reminded me of something, because and growing up I was not allowed to play Dungeons and Dragons, but I in Boy Scouts I remember.
Wait, you were in Boy Scouts?
Yeah.
We've never had this conversation. I did not know that. Are you an Eagle Scout?
No.
I'll rank you. I think I should be running the show.
No, I was a Life Scout, and I can't remember exactly what the problem was, but
it's like one rank away.
I know. Well, and I was kind of pissed about it even then, and I remain pissed about it in the kind of the way of, you know, of an older guy who's just like, I could have been an Eagle Scout. I really don't actually care.
I put it on my resume.
Well, I would have too if I were an Eagle Scout.
Eagle Scout. I always feel like a poser.
Yeah, but no. Okay, so what happened with that was I was a Life Scout, and I had some conflict with some extracurricular activity at school that I was not going to really be able to get to the weekly meetings with consistency. And the scout leaders, you know, essentially told me, it's like, look, if you're not here every week, we're never going to promote you. So,
you were already at Life Scout, though.
I know, but it was just going to be impossible for me to get promoted.
But how old were you?
I was, I don't know. How old?
You could be a Boy Scout till you're 18.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I was in high school or whatever.
You were in high school, yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, no, I wasn't like in, like, this wasn't third grade.
No, right, but like, so you were close to 17 years old, you think, probably then? That's why they didn't think that you would make it if... I don't know. That seems sad. It seems like it goes.
I do understand, but at the same time, it was like, guys, yeah, I really wish that they had worked with me on that, because this, you know, it wasn't like I was trying to skip or anything like that.
Right.
It was a legitimate conflict. I was not going to be able to come all the time, or part of the time, you know, or. The majority of the time, I guess. But anyways, and so, you know, at that point, it was like, well, I can keep going to all the meetings and they're not going to promote me. Or, you know, I could just go focus on other stuff since they're going to be like that. And so I did. There was a couple of guys who were like a year older than me. I remember it being like on one particular trip where they were talking a lot about Dungeons and Dragons, and it was something that I was curious about, but had never seen or played or, you know, anything.
Yeah.
And I remember them talking about it for quite some time, and all I remember, and I might not even be remembering this right because this doesn't actually make sense to me. That they played with a player who was just the character was like so skilled with darts that you know, that like this character like taking on like this whole group of whatever orcs or what, you know, goblins or what, probably not goblins, but you know, something, you know, by himself, and they were like trying to get him to stop using darts because he was just too good with them or something like that. And it's like, and you know, kind of looking back on it and having played Dungeons and Dragons now, it's like, why in the world was it, if this was a warrior, why was he using darts? That's kind of weird. But you know, it's also one of those things that after you've created so many characters, you start, you know, doing weird things to your characters, and so maybe this guy, I'm just gonna be the dart guy, and he ended up leveling up a lot, and it became, I don't know, really good at him. But yeah, it just seemed like a very weird conversation. But at the time, it was like, whoa, yeah, it's like a warrior just use darts. you know? And so that was my memory of Dungeons and Dragons, of you know, eavesdropping into a Dungeons and Dragons conversation and Boy Scouts.
Well, dude, that's really awesome. And I remember hearing some people talking about D&D too, not to that extent, but I mean, I just remember it was mentioned on the, you know, like through, it was like a lurking thing that I was interested in as well, but I just, there was nobody that was playing it on campouts when I went. Yeah. But so you never played with them? You never got in on it? Or
no, I wasn't allowed to.
Would your parents have known?
Okay, I was like, I was a good boy.
Oh, okay.
You know, like I was a rule follower.
So when they said D&D, were you like, oh my, and like, you're like, yes, hand across your mouth, and then but like, yeah, you're like listening in
myself,
like,
and
yeah, you're like, your head's like leaning in, like, what can I hear? So
well, you know, and I did this too when I was it was probably about the same time where my friend Chris, who was a friend of mine forever, growing up in school, like we went to school together from first grade through 12th, and you know, after 12th grade was like most people in high school, last time I saw him. But he was big in Dungeons and Dragons, and we were really close friends. And then he would have very much enjoyed it if I was able to play with them. But there was one time in recess that it was very clear that I didn't have the foggiest clue what Dungeons and Dragons was, and so he decided that, you know, he would like give me an example of what, you know, of what this dungeon might be like in all this, and he presented a puzzle. I don't remember what the puzzle was, but he presented a puzzle to me, and it's like, and I think he thought that I was really gonna just latch onto it and figure out right away, and I didn't have the foggiest clue.
You're like, what are you talking about, man?
He's like, I had no idea. And
did he look at you like sidelong, like you would never make it?
Well, yeah, kind of. So these were my Dungeons and Dragons experiences before college, and in college, I plan to talk about this in a little bit more detail, but I tried to start a group because I just really wanted to play, and I got this beginner set. I never played, and I convinced some friends to play, and none of them had ever played, so they, you know, they told me that I was going to run it, so I was going to be dungeon master the first time I played the game, and we did, and we had fun, but we, you know, it was just like, they were all like, yeah, that was a lot of fun, we should do that again sometime. I'm like, yeah, what about like, you know, like next week? They're like, I don't know, like sometime. Like, okay, like 2 weeks.
These are sad stories.
I know. Well, and the next game I convinced them to play was MERP, which we're going to do an episode on.
You played MERP with them?
I played MERP with them. That was when I got MERP as a game for the first time.
So you had played MERP before?
Yes, exactly one time, because they were all Tolkien fans, and so I was like, hey, this is Middle Earth role playing, and they're like, oh, we'll play that. And then they're like, yeah, that was a lot of fun, maybe we'll play again sometime.
You're like, how about next Thursday? They're like, sometime.
Yeah, I don't know,
bro.
Let's play it by ear,
you know.
I'm way off topic, but
no. I've got to finish this out for you, man. Because this is what I feel like has to happen, man. I feel like at some point in this show, we need to have a special episode where you are like Chewbacca. You come up, you get the award too. You know, it's like you get the medal, you get the Eagle Scout. We'll award you the Eagle Scout, and then we'll all sit down and play D&D together, and then we'll have a great time, and then we'll schedule the next time we play at the end of the episode. And then I'll feel better.
We already do that, except
except
scheduling the next session.
I did respond for one of our games. I feel good about that. Actually felt really good, accomplished,
right? Well, you know, and what's kind of weird about all that is I mean, like, I grew up on Star Trek. Like, my mom was a Star Trek fanatic.
Dude, my mom was too.
Yeah, and so we watched
Star Trek. It's like, Riker.
When, Well, yeah, I mean, I predated that a little bit, but when Next Generation came out,
okay, yeah,
we were there, we were ready to watch this show, and so I grew up on Star Trek at very least, and I never enormously connected that with being nerdy. And I think a lot of that had to do with I was an early bloomer. And so for like a lot of like middle school, I was head and shoulders taller than everyone. A lot of my time was focused on athletics. And when high school came around, that's when everybody caught up with me. And that's when I joined Speech and Debate and Deep Space Nine had come out, and I started reading Star Trek novels. And by the time you're in Speech and Debate and you're reading Star Trek novels,
you're a nerd.
Yeah. Oh goodness. Yes. And,
you got your nerd card.
Oh, and if I didn't get a nerd card, I got a nerd jacket, and that was my letter jacket in debate.
That's so awesome.
That I wore in high school. So yeah.
you know what? I think this is time for me to step in real quick and say, you were a nerd in high school. I was homeschooled. I was the biggest nerd, dude. I like, even nerds went to high school. They were cool because they were in high school. I lived across the street from a high school where I was homeschooled. In my house, across the street was a private Catholic high school. And when I was, this is really embarrassing, I'm going to say this because I want this show to be great, and I want a lot of listeners to come back and listen to us talk because we're awesome. But
wait. Are you going to entice people back thinking that they're going to think you're awesome by telling a really embarrassing, sad story?
We want nerds to listen to this, and most nerds have really embarrassing, sad stories. That's part of what makes them a nerd. So I would dress up as though I went to this high school because they had a uniform. And so I had a blue shirt and khaki pants, which is what their uniform was. And I would dress up.
This is sad.
And I would put a backpack on, and I'd walk down the street by my house because they used to, the other kids from the school, they, you know, some of them lived in the neighborhood. I never knew any of them because I was super sheltered and homeschooled. I mean, and that was my early high school years. Late middle school.
I was expecting you to be just glued to the window making a frowny face, but you cosplayed as a normal kid.
Yeah. I was like, what would it be like to be in your world? Put my outfit on and find out. Right. You know what? It was pretty boring. Yeah, nobody, and like, I think a couple of times people like would say something to me like, hey man, and I'd just be like, I'm too cool to talk. I'd pretend like I was even cooler than they were.
Yeah.
I don't even have to address you. Nah, dude, I was a weird little kid. But but yeah, man, so yeah, at least you went to high school.
Wow.
I didn't even have a letter jacket.
I think I still have mine. You can have it if you'd like.
Hey, I'll give you my Eagle Scout badge. You give me your letter jacket and we'll be somehow complete.
put it on my resume. Okay. All right. So I did for the longest time. I might still have it on my resume for that now that I think about it. I put on my resume that I had a degree of distinction from the the National Forensic League, which sounds a lot more impressive than it is. It just means I went to a lot of speech and debate tournaments and got a lot of points. And so the degree of distinction, I think that was what it was. I remember it was the Ruby badge, but it sounds freaking awesome, right? And people in interviews been like, you know, oh, National Forensic League, what is that? It's like, I was a nerd in high school, you know?
that's awesome though, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
A degree of distinction. What a good name too.
I know, right?
Yeah, just don't say your Ruby badge.
Yeah, no, I got a Ruby badge.
He's like, oh, you're into Pokemon?
My God.
That's crazy.
Come on, Pikachu.
Dude, I bought my son all the refurbished, not refurbished, but all the Pokemon for Game Boy, like Ruby. And I didn't know there were so many colors.
Oh, but anyway, yeah.
But I don't think they're refurbished. They're like knockoffs or something. I don't know. But they all work. And he's playing the crud out of them.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. Sorry, that was out of nowhere. I said Pokemon. Because I never played Pokemon. Never got into Pokemon. But I hear about it all the time. So
all right. You're going to get excited about this.
Okay.
So are you aware of Pokemon Unite?
Oh, no, I'm not.
Okay. All right. Get ready for this.
Okay.
This is going to be a Pokemon MOBA.
Ooh.
Which is kind of trippy.
That actually might be a good way for me to learn about Pokemon.
Well, I'm saying it's like, you know, hey, you know what? There's a lot of characters that do a lot of different stuff. That's probably not a bad idea at all.
That's actually a really good idea. Who's producing it?
Why are you asking me questions that I don't know?
Okay. We'll come back. We'll come back around to that.
I don't know if somebody else is. All right. Well, when that gets closer, we're going to deal more with that. But
a good little treat preview.
Right. Yeah. So, all right. We're gonna jump over to a break. Break real quick. We're gonna come back in and hit a little Doom. Doom, not Doom. Dune. We'll deal with Doom later.
We could talk Doom.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Just really quick. The couple places that you can find us. The Techno Funk Boy on pretty much any platform. Techno Funk Boy is actually a band that does a lot of video game covers as well as original stuff. A lot of podcast soundtracks as well. And so you can find us on a bunch of different places, including Twitch and YouTube. On YouTube, I'm doing a lot of Dungeons and Dragons videos on Twitch, mostly playing retro games. And so do check us out there. We are also on Patreon, which is bold for us to say since this is our first episode, but we actually have been producing content for a while, and that's why we have Patreon already set up, you know. That is kind of, that's me a little, you know, I'm making some assumptions, I think, you know, when your first episode comes out and find us on Patreon. Yeah,
we've been around, you know who we are.
Yeah, we've done things, but please do check us out there, and we will be right back.
All right.
Greetings all, it's Phil here from Phil's Gaming Emporium. We're at philsgamingemporium.com. I am so excited to be here at the first episode of the Retro Station. We have been so looking forward to this. We've been so excited that I authorized the production of a commemorative edition of Super Mario Brothers 1 with Duck Hunt. And the SNES, this is a special commemorative edition. It's a real NES cart, but for the special occasion of the first episode of the Retro Station, it is Super Mario Brothers with Duck Hunt with commemorative edition written in permanent marker on the back for your enjoyment. Special price. Limited numbered editions for just $150 each. That's at philsgamingemporium.com. philsgamingemporium.com. You'd better hurry. This deal is not going to last.
Oh, well, welcome back, everybody. How did you learn? What was your, like, what's your first encounter with Dune?
My first encounter? Oh, dude, I've got some... Some Dune stories.
Some Dune stories? Because we're only...
Yeah, I know. I won't go into all of them. Basically, I'll just sum it up.
I'm going to start listening to some music. Hold on.
Okay. Put some music on.
Right.
I actually started writing a novel when I was like 17. I was going to write this big fantasy epic. And it turned out I was just writing Dune. Because I had watched the Dune series with... wasn't the old one, it was the TV show one, I think.
That was sci-fi, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so. That's the one I've seen. I actually have not seen the
old one.
Yeah,
it was a TV miniseries. Yeah, dude, that was awesome.
Yeah, I really liked it.
It really influenced me. It really made me you know, I fell in love with Arrakis. but I loved I love Paul. The dude was an amazing protagonist and, you know, right, character. Yeah. So anyway, that was how I got into it. And then, like I said, I started writing a book once, and then I realized, like, oh crap, I'm just writing Dune. So I stopped it, but I still have it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Where can I see?
I'm embarrassed, but maybe one day we'll, you know what? Actually, I'll try to find, it's in my email somewhere. I will send it to you. I've got like 8 or 9 chapters of it. I mean, I've got a lot of it. I mean, a lot, wow, of a book, but it was basically, it's called Cobalt Sky. And, it's very, very similar storyline. But, when I realized I was writing Dune, I stopped writing it because I was so mad.
That's good.
Yeah. I was like, crap, this is Dune. And then I just, but anyway, so that was my first, but okay. So then after that, what is your first one? Because I'm just going to start talking about Dune nonstop.
Oh, okay.
How did you stumble across Dune?
In college, when I worked at Barnes & Noble for a little bit, and I bought a bunch of books that were like books that I should read, you know?
Yeah.
Like in science fiction and fantasy, and I bought a ton of books. And just kind of piled them up, and it was any author that was considered important or whatever, just to at least get their first book, and was reading them a lot more slowly than I was buying them, but that one I got, but it was kind of like a lot of major works that. Even though I read a lot of science fiction and fantasy, I just never quite got to. Ender's Game is another one. I just read that for the first time here very recently. I have these books. I own them, but I just it took a long time to actually read them. Because I think part of it, frankly, is that I discovered about the same time Dragonlance books. I occupied a lot of my time. We'll get to there too. It was Anla who loaned me the miniseries that she had on DVD, and so I got to watch it, and was also really impressed. I found, like, for $1 a hardback copy of Dune, and got that. So now I had 2 copies of it. And I hadn't read either one. But then I think you started reading it first, and I knew that the movie was coming up. I was like, I mean, I really should read it before the movie comes out.
Yeah, and well, so, I had started reading it probably 2 or 3 different times before. Because I had heard, you know, everyone's like, oh, Dune, you know, and my little brothers had read it, and they were like, oh, it's so awesome. And they said, like, it starts off slow, but you just got to get past the first part. And I never got past it. I never allowed myself to be sucked into the world, you know, I've had the same problems with other authors, sci-fi authors. My very favorite sci-fi author is Philip K. Dick. And I had trouble getting into a couple of his books because you have to really, you kind of have to just trudge through the world. And I feel like, right, Frank Abair was similar in that you just got to read it, and you get it's dense at first, but then as you start to piece together so I never got through it until I got an audiobook, and then I didn't have to read it. I just, like, let it play in my ear, so that was when I listened to it.
Yeah,
and I was freaking out about it, as you remember.
Yeah, so I'm kind of freaking out right now because is that how he says his name, or said his name, I should say?
That's how you say it in Louisiana. Yeah, it's the French pronunciation. Abair. And I always say
French,
that.
Right?
I know, but when I see Hebert, or Herbert, or however you say his name, it's I read it as Abair because everybody in Louisiana says Abair, and I have connections to Louisiana, so deep connections.
Well, we do have a little bit of advantage here. in that I think we both got the audiobook. And so most actually, this might be the only thing we don't pronounce the same way, though it is hilarious talking to some of our other friends who are reading this at the same time and pronounce things completely differently than we do.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's like a pronunciation guide or anything in it, but to an extent, you know, fantasy and science fiction fans are used to this stuff. It's like, even though Lord of the Rings has a pronunciation guide, I was mispronouncing a lot of stuff for a long time.
Yeah.
Like I said, Legolas.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
That actually sounds better than Legolas, because that sounds like lost your legs.
Galadriel.
Oh, that's bad.
Galadriel's a lot prettier. Yes.
Yeah.
But
it does sound more mysterious when you say it the way you were saying it. And she is Elvish, so maybe we're onto something there.
Well, and it's really sad because there is a pronunciation guide in that. But that whole starting books a couple of times. I did that with Lord of the Rings, and Lord of the Rings is my favorite book. But you have to be in a certain place to invest in the world, otherwise it's just not going to work. And Philip K. Dick is like that. There was one the one book I got that I got halfway through it and I realized I missed something, and it was apparently important. I don't know what the hell's going on. I need to get back to that one day too. I bought that at the same time period where I was working at the bookstore. It's like you were speaking so highly of it, and so I plugged it in, and I found myself getting more and more excited about the book and more excited about the upcoming film, and I am very curious because you have seen the original movie.
Yeah. No, I have not seen the original movie.
I thought you had.
No, I haven't. Isn't it? But I know who the director is. Isn't the director
David Lynch. Crazy,
the crazy guy? Yeah.
That crazy guy. Yes.
Yeah, David Lynch. Well, I've seen. Have you ever seen Naked Lunch?
No.
Yeah, he's crazy. The dude is crazy, like legitimately crazy. Like, I don't know. I mean, or Eraserhead. These are like, I guess, or maybe they were movies when he was like in film school. But I just remember.
Oh no, I mean he's weird. He's like, I didn't watch. I don't think I've seen actually any of his films. I watched Twin Peaks. I loved Twin Peaks. But there's some. He makes weird movies.
Yeah, he's a weird guy. But you know, that's cool. But yeah. I didn't know. So actually, I'd be really interested to see that. I'd actually be really interested because all I've seen is his artsy stuff, and it would be interesting to see what he did with Dune. But I actually can't give any background on that.
Really, oh, okay. Did you watch Twin Peaks?
No, I didn't because I didn't like his stuff in the beginning. Like I'm serious. When I saw, let me see if it's Naked Lunch. I want to make sure I'm not I'm looking that up because. It's a novel by William S. Burroughs, but let me see who directed the movie. But anyway, it was David. No, yeah, it was directed. No, I'm sorry, David Cronenberg. Sorry, got that mixed up.
Well, David, you know.
Yeah, David Lynch, David Cronenberg. Anyway, Eraserhead was maybe one of the only David Lynch movies I've seen, but like this, it's this very bizarre film. I can't even describe it very well, except for. I remember at one point this guy goes over to this girl's house and her her parents, you know, like he's going over for dinner or something. And there's like this weird chicken thing on the plate that like is like, it's like it's alive. And I don't know. It was weird. So, not wasn't necessarily compelled by his early stuff to ever want to see anything else he did, except I've heard everybody that. I guess the only people I'm going to talk about are the people that liked it. I don't know anybody that hasn't said good things about Twin Peaks, so that's probably something I should get into.
Well, Twin Peaks is great because, like, for most of the first season, you're like, is David Lynch really working on this? Because it seems like there's not, it makes sense, and you know, it's like a murder mystery,
right?
And then by the end of the second season, you're like, oh yeah, that's David Lynch.
again.
But it progresses so naturally. It's really great. But in any case, yeah. So I haven't seen that one either. I'm curious about it because just for the simple fact that there's no way you fit this movie into 2 hours or however long that movie is.
Right.
This book. There's just way too much going on.
Such an epic sci-fi opera.
Right.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way about the animated Lord of the Rings film, which. Is actually only part one of two. The second part never got made, but it only does half the plot. But even then, it's like, guys, that was way too short. It needs to be Peter Jackson, 12 hours long. And this is the same way. And so I was really pleased to know that the new movie is going to be two parts, and so it gives him a little bit more time to spend on.
I didn't know that.
I don't know exactly where they're going to split it. There's a very natural split point, but
right.
Kind of getting into it a little bit is this is a book with a lot of political intrigue, a lot of manipulation attempts from house to house of trying to corner your political enemies. Or just shoot them, whatever. however it works is fine.
Well, it's very dystopian in the fact that they're always expecting it. It's like it's part of the Mentat or whatever his the specialized security / assassin. I don't know if it's the Mentat, but anyway, like they would check the rooms for everything shielded against like assassinations. Like they.
Right, right.
It's like, yeah, that's how you deal with your opponent. And so, it ends up, working.
And so the basic setup is that this planet, Arrak, is very important because this is where we get spice. And spice is the drug that makes the world work, the universe run. It is almost quite literally the oil for spaceships in kind of a more of a narcotic type of way. And so it's very important, but it's also just this really just terrible place and of just almost no natural resources except spice, including water. It's just like everything you can get out of anything is valuable here. The House Atreides is sent there with Leto and his girlfriend, Jessica.
Oh.
And their son, Paul. And Jessica is one of the Bene Gesserits who... is this group that just
a religion, it's a priesthood
who studies how to manipulate people because everybody's manipulating everybody in this stupid world. I'm so glad I don't live there.
And, we do actually,
yeah,
they're the media.
As soon as the manipulation stops, that's when everyone dies. And their son Paul seems to be the inheritor of this power, and so they're...
what's it called? What's the name of it? The Quasi-Satarak? How did you say it?
Oh, I don't... That sounds right. I don't know.
It's like the Quasi-Satarak. I don't know. I'd always say it in my mind. Anyway, sorry. I'd go around saying it to myself. So yeah, he's the Messiah character.
Yeah. The first half of this book, I texted you after getting through this dinner party scene.
Oh yes.
And this is a scene that like encapsulates how why this book is good, because this is just a scene of a bunch of like important people getting together for dinner, but it's mostly seen through Jessica's eyes and the way she, she analyzes every sentence, the way she prepares every response, the way she is trying to move the conversation, not just to her own ends, but also to get hidden answers, to figure things out. And it's all kind of seen through her, her thought process as things go through. And it's not as simple as like, oh, that guy's a jerk and he's trying to betray us. But what can I say to get him to expose himself further? You know, what words need to be said in order to alert so and so about what's going on here? And is so and so going to pick up on my play here? And this is the entire scene of just basically these word games between these people.
Well, but the funny thing is it's also kind of a coming of age time for Paul, and he's there at this dinner party too.
Yeah.
Again, uh-huh. She's watching she's basically watching the fruition, like the her training of Paul, because, okay, so the Bene Gesserit are mostly women. In fact, they're all women, but she trained her son. She was supposed to have a girl child. Like the high priestess or whatever was like, they're all supposed to have girl child, but she kind of went against that, like a rogue drone, like a rogue ant, you know, who like cultivates right. like the, she had a son because she knew that's what she was actually in love with her husband, it's not really her husband. It's more of like she's the concubine of this ruler or whatever. But anyway, so they have this kid and she can control the gender, I guess, somehow. Yeah. She's a Bene Gesserit, so she has a son, and she like kind of flies in the face of their religion and their order, and so they're all like kind of ticked at her. But so she follows that up by like training her son to be a bit like in the Bene Gesserit ways, which is like you were saying, like very like picking up on subtleties and conversation. Like they're kind of like super ninjas, like they're like ninjas, but they're also like mind ninjas,
primarily trained for politics,
right. Right, they have some tricks up their sleeve. They're pretty bad,
When you read this book, you start to realize that killing people is definitely a part of politics in this.
It's a part of their whole culture, yeah. But no, so that dinner scene is like her watching her son kind of come out of being a child, and it's like his presentation kind of, and he's like. She's second guessing some of the decisions he's making, some of the things he's saying, like, oh, that's too bold. He shouldn't have said that. But then she's like, oh, wait, it made them do this thing that she didn't even foresee what they would do. Like he's getting reactions that she didn't anticipate. And so he's kind of like, through that entire book, he's just blowing every expectation out of the water. Right. And I've never read another book where the protagonist, I've read actually he's a bit, one other he's book, a, but
he's
but,
a bit OP.
He is. Well, he's, yeah.
But put in a situation, this is one of the reasons I like him is that, you know, it's not something that he just goes into a room and demolishes his enemies. He can do that, but he has to get to the room first, and the series of events makes it that difficult. But that in particular scene is like that's how many levels this one scene is working on. It's not just what people are saying. It's how Jessica's interpreting it, how she's analyzing it, how she is coming up with a solution. And then we're starting to figure out that Paul is doing the exact same thing. We're not seeing it through his eyes, but he's doing the exact same thing and coming to different conclusions and acting on those. And then Jessica is reacting to that and figuring out and trying to figure out what he's doing as well.
But that dinner party
sets, really, really cool.
It's amazing. You know, and that dinner party sets the groundwork for some major plot. It's definitely an important plot point in the story. And yeah, it sets the framework for a lot of things that happen later with like not mercenaries, but like it sets things in motion. Yeah, it's a cool scene.
Well, that's one thing that I really like about the book is that, you know, there's a lot of fantasy books, especially fantasy books that have a lot of names in them, a lot of characters. You know, it's like when I was reading Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time series, by about book 6 or 7, I had to keep a character list, and it was multiple pages long. But he would just name people and for no reason, you know? It's like, the guard on the right was called, you know, Frank, and he had a wife named Susie, and they had lost their first child whose name was Bob. And you never saw this person again. There was no reason to do that, and it drove me crazy. That does not really happen in Dune. You know, the people, there are a lot of people.
There are a lot, which makes it interesting that how that converts to a movie. But
yeah, well, yeah, the cast for the film is huge. And by the way, the cast for the movie is great. I am really excited about it. But the people that are introduced, that are given names, are important. You know, that they take part in this plot and they contribute to this plot, and they might not all make it to the end. In fact, a lot of them do not. But they are important. That's one of the things that's really cool about what is really essentially an ensemble cast of characters. Because I mean, Paul is the hero, but for the first half of the book, Paul is not in it very much. You know, he has some very, very important key scenes, but most of it is really about how Leto and Jessica are kind of setting up this world and how they're approaching ruling over it. When Paul shows up, it's really important, but he doesn't show up that often. It is not until the second half of the book where he really comes into his own and steps up to become who he's going to be.
Would you have that? You have it foreshadowed from the very beginning, but you're right.
There's
a lot of emphasis, and I love that about the book, because you know Jessica plays a huge role. I mean, it's like
the
main characters in the book are in order of like how much you read about them. It's Paul, and then Jessica, and then you know everybody else, because Jessica is pretty much the secondary, you know, protagonist or alongside him or whatever.
Well, I would say that if you don't know that Paul Atreides is the hero, for the first half of the book, you might think it's Jessica because she's so focused on.
Right.
I mean, you're right. There's a lot of foreshadowing of what's happening with Paul, but you could very easily get through the first half of the book, you know, going, you know, oh, okay, this is a story about how Jessica, helps Paul achieve all these things, and it's really her, you know.
Right. But then, but I guess you start to realize, like, oh wait, he, and honestly, dude, that compounds itself. It's compounding throughout the book, like Paul's ability to basically blow all expectations out of the water over and over again. Yeah. And you'd think an author couldn't do that. And that's the funny thing about it is like, how does it stay interesting when he keeps just busting every expectation, you know, in half, and like just going, or you know, achieving every expectation, and it works. And part of it is because you're more in Jessica's head, I think, than in Paul's head. As a reader, and so
Paul's head is often confusing.
But it's like, and it confuses him too. I don't know. Anyway,
oh, it does absolutely.
Dude,
yeah,
it's amazing, and I do think there's interesting. You know, having seen the miniseries before I read the book, I did know that Paul was super awesome. So like, there was no doubt in my mind at any point. So it was just more of like waiting for it to happen and waiting to see it, and it happens in such. The magnitude of it happening is reading it, and that's why.
Right.
With the movie, I'm excited about it, but man, it's one of those books that, you know me, like on my stance on Lord of the Rings and everything. I'm like, I like the movies, but I just, it's hard for me sometimes to separate genres in terms of like, oh, well, this is just a different genre or different. No, sorry, not genre, mediums. It's hard for me to separate mediums and not focus on like, you know, this was a better medium, you know, and then want to be exclusive to that medium. Like, well, we should never have made the movie. So I don't necessarily think we shouldn't have made the movies, but
I will kick you off this podcast.
So no, dude, I think the movie should never have been made. Lord of the Rings. I think they're terrible. And no, I'm just kidding.
So thank you for joining us for the last episode of Retro Station.
The first and last. No. it's an important skill to enjoyment. Is being able to separate, okay, that was the book. Of course it's going to be more detailed and better, because it's not restricted by time. But I think that one day somebody should make aren't they doing a Lord of the Rings TV show? I just think they should have a spend more time on it anyway.
Yeah.
So Dune, I wish I could have made five parts or 10 parts or something.
Right. I'm sure we will talk about the Lord of the Rings TV show when it comes out, because I'm kind of a Tolkien dork too. it is a very good skill to learn, to kind of separate things and take each medium as it is. And I'll give you, like a really good example of this is that Stephen King hated Stanley Kubrick's version of The Shining because he changed stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, and so Stephen King tried to make the movie where it didn't change stuff and it sucked because moving topiaries is really super creepy in a book and it's laughable when you actually see it, you know?
Wait, what is a topiary?
Hedge animals made out of plant, you know, bushes.
Hedge animals?
They're bushes cut into to look like animals. You have seen these.
Yes, okay. I didn't know their name was topiary. Yes.
So that happens in the book, is that there's a bunch of these topiaries out there and they start moving around. And it's one of those things where it's like Jack turns around and they're in different positions and stuff and they start moving after him. And it's like, it's super creepy in the book. It looked like crap in the movie because that's not scary when you actually see it. It looks goofy. And Kubrick changed it to a hedge maze, which is super creepy. And it would not have been creepy in the book. And anyways, that's my rant on that, you know, some things work in one medium and they don't work in another.
And so you've got to give the director license to change. Yeah,
Kubrick understood that. Stephen King did not.
But I think, we should have an episode on Kubrick because that guy was on another level altogether.
Yep.
And deserves an entire,
All right. Well, we are going to go into more on Dune because I know that you have a lot more to say about it, and but we kind of wanted to give a little bit of a warm up on it as we get closer to the movie, which movies are moving around release dates this year so far, and so it might not be out this year, but that's the plan as far as I know. Last I looked. It was the plan to release this year. And so as we get closer, we are going to touch back on Dune and talk a little bit more about it, go into more spoilers and into the film. But for right now, that's good, kind of give us a little bit of a opening discussion on it. And we do appreciate you sticking with us through this episode and hope that you will join us for episode 2. If you are on Discord, the link to our Discord server will be in the episode description, but you can also look for search for Techno Funk Boy in Discord and please join us. And we'll be happy to talk more Dune, more video games, and all of that as well. So, other than that, that's all I got.
Good. Hopefully we've whetted your palate. All right, that was very bad. No. Hope to see you guys soon, next time.
And we just lost our whole audience. All right.
All right.
We'll see y'all next week.
All right.